We have next an impromptu. Great artists stop by here at the WFMT Performance Studio and play for us, such is the case this afternoon. And to tell you about it, here's George Preston.
Thank you so much, Carrie. The New York Times said of our guest this afternoon, pianist Andreas Klein, a fascinating artist with all the indispensable qualities, temperament, taste, touch, tone, the four T's of pianism, a pianist who makes silences sound like music. Andreas Klein will be making his Ravinia debut on Sunday, 6 p.m. at Ravinia's Bennett Gordon Hall, and he's playing for us this afternoon. In a little while, we'll hear some music by Sergei Prokofiev, but we'll begin this program with Mozart's Sonata in A minor. This is number 310 in the Kirchhoff catalog of Mozart's works. Here is Andreas Klein.
Thank you.
Live in the Faye and Daniel Levin Performance Studio at WFMT, pianist Andreas Klein playing Mozart's Sonata in A Minor, Kirchhoff-Listing 310 here on WFMT. Mr. Klein has been a soloist and been to the world's most prestigious venues, London's Wigmore Hall, Berlin's Philharmonic Hall, New York's Carnegie Hall and Alice Tully Hall, the Kennedy Center. One could go on, but it's your Ravinia debut on Sunday, Andreas Klein, 6 p.m., Bennett Gordon Hall. Talk about your program for Ravinia and what's the journey you hope to take listeners on with these pieces.
I have a program of piano sonatas, and what is maybe special about it is that there's no Beethoven being played. The program consists of Mozart, which you just heard, the Ravel Sonatine, the third Prokofiev sonata, and the quite colossal symphonic F minor sonata by Brahms. This highlights the fact, or this showcases, how composers of different time periods used the sonata form as a vessel for their ideas and inspirations. And it's quite interesting to see in this particular collection of pieces how you can go without playing a Beethoven sonata, and you start out with a classical, actually pre-classical sonata, a very dramatic piece that Mozart wrote under the impression of having lost his mother in Paris, who died suddenly, and he had to go back to Salzburg to his father and composed this A minor sonata under the circumstances of the death of his mother and traveling back by himself as a very, very young man. Mm-hmm. And so he adheres to the three-movement typical classical sonata form. In the Ravel sonatine, being a sonatine means it's a small sonata or sonatina, everything that you typically do in a textbook sonata is condensed, it's shortened, it's abbreviated, and this particular piece has, in addition to the thematic elements, has the beauty of many, many colors, and of course that is one of the trademarks of Ravel, you know, and mm-hmm. therefore it's a very delicate piece to play. And then as a contrast, this is followed by the Prokofiev Third Sonata, not a late piece where he was very much influenced by the Second World War, but still a younger Prokofiev, you could say, and it's actually a very folksy type of music. And when Ravel condensed his sonata form to a sonatina, but he still had three movements. What Prokofiev does is he even compresses the form more, and so you arrive at a one-movement sonata. Actually, the elements of a typical sonata structure is a fast movement, a slow lyrical movement, and a fast finale, like in the Mozart.
Mm-hmm.
In the sonatina, this is still the case. In Prokofiev, that is also the case, but it all happens within the same movement. And that's very interesting to see how the form becomes smaller and smaller.
And then things are opened back up for your final piece on the
program. And then, of course, comes this monstrous, I would call it a symphony for the piano, that Brahms wrote when he was, I believe, something like 20 years old. And he came to Schumann with this particular sonata in his suitcase. And he played it for Schumann and Clara. They gave him some tips and pointers, and so this is a five-movement piece. It's beautiful, romantic music, and it's really a bombastic piece, but in the best sense of the word. And what is so challenging in this piano program is that you go from the transparency of a Mozart playing, you go to the very sensitive, very lyrical, flimsy playing of Ravel. You go to a very robust type of percussive sounding piano playing in Prokofiev at times.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this voluptuous sound of a Brahms to generate on the piano.
Sounds like quite a wonderful musical journey. I'm speaking with Andreas Klein, who's my guest today on WFMT, and we'll hear that Prokofiev sonata in just a moment. But first, I want to ask you, Andreas, before we went on the air, we were talking a bit, and you told me you're not only a pianist, but also a recording producer and engineer. Why did you decide to lead this kind of double life and not just play piano, but also produce recordings, not only for yourself, but for others?
Yes, I do that. That's the other part of my split personality. When I'm the pianist, of course, I'm involved with playing the piano and making music and all this, or working with others if I play with orchestra. When I'm recording other people, I draw from the experience having been recorded or having played into microphones like I do now, and what it takes to guide people through this process who maybe have not done it before. And it's not about the technology only, but it's about the sensitivity to react to people, to help them achieve their best in a rather sterile recording session, because let's face it, you have no audience. There's nobody to applaud, there's nobody to inspire you, and you have to envision there would be an audience that is listening. And then at the very end of the day, it's about, well, do you have all the right notes in the right rhythms and every, you know, little technical detail? Do you really have it in the box?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have it on the hard drive today? You know, did it come through what you wanted to give to the audience? And so in working with other musicians or ensembles, you know, recently I did a production with a chamber orchestra, and currently I'm involved in a Baroque music project. So I get to work with other types of musicians. I get to hear totally different music that I do not personally play. And that's very interesting. That's very challenging at times. And so it keeps me out of trouble.
Well, and I'm sure it's knowing another aspect of the music business that helps inform your career as a pianist as well.
Partly, yes. I have to totally split those things because on one hand, I'm concerned about promoting classical music with mm-hmm. my own playing. I hope that most people are inspired enough to come back to a piano recital, which by the very institution is something of a very, very old vehicle today. You know, I mean, think about the fact that the typical audience buys a ticket and they go to a concert hall, which does not look like a cathedral or a beautiful hall that you might find in Europe or something like that, but it's a concert hall, maybe with wood paneling, but it's a sterile environment. Mm-hmm. And the only entertainment, so to speak, is that you sit there and you listen to music and you have to be happy with it. And somehow we assume that the audience going into a concert knows what the piece is going to be about. So they know how to behave, they know what to listen for. And unfortunately, the school systems and oftentimes the parents do not prepare the younger listeners for this type of experience. And so they turn on the television or they go to a rock concert and they see much more than music. Because there, you have light effects and you have smoke machines and you have all sorts of other things. And at a piano recital or violin recital for that matter, you cannot switch the channel if Mozart doesn't inspire you or you're not interested. Well, you cannot change the channel and you have to listen to it, you know. And for some people, that's today, in today's world, a big problem.
Well, I want to talk about some of the ways in which you think we might interest people in classical music in what we'll call the iPhone age of people constantly looking at little glowing rectangles or large glowing rectangles. But let's hear some more music first. You've brought another piece from your program for Ravinia's Bennett Gordon Hall. Again, my guest is Andreas Klein, and he will be performing Sunday evening, 6 p.m. at Bennett Gordon Hall at Ravinia. And you have music by Prokofiev for us now, the third sonata.
Yes.
Here we go. Andreas Klein, live in the Faye and Daniel Levin Performance Studio on WFMT. Thank you. Fantastic. What great fun. The third sonata by Prokofiev, played live in the Fay and Daniel Levin Performance Studio by Andreas Klein this afternoon on WFMT. Andreas, we started talking a little bit before Prokofiev about the challenges in presenting classical music to modern audiences where, you know, you can sit in front of your computer and surf the web, but you almost never find a clip that's longer than 5 or 6 minutes. For instance, and if you don't like that one, well, you just click to the next one and on and on and on. And everything about our modern online plugged-in life kind of goes counter to the ethos of sitting and listening to one single piece of classical music for 30 or 40 minutes. So as a performer and as an artist and record producer and engineer, what are some of the good ideas that you have seen to get modern audiences to really connect with classical music on its own terms?
Well, what you say is very, very true. The distribution of music today is incredibly easy. And as you mentioned, you know, you can have access to any type of music at any time of the day. And you even now with YouTube and iTunes and places like that, you can even compare easily interpretations from performers, even going back probably 20, 30 years. It's amazing what I sometimes find, what is out there and some pirate recordings and videotapes even and so forth. So having said all that, first of all, what I regret is that the quality of audio that is then available to these people on the computer is really of such a low quality that we are, in terms of that, we are back like in the 50s. Mm-hmm. It's like having a little transistor radio, and it's not stereo, it's not even surround sound, it's not what it can be. On the other side of the spectrum, we can have the most fantastic recording technology today, so that even those who refuse to accept the digital recording method are now finally coming over to the camp and say, well, actually, it can sound right, provided you do the right things. Now, when you then look at all these possibilities, what is missing is the experience that you still find only in the concert hall. Before I described the concert hall as being a clinical place, but if you're willing to concentrate for 1.5 hours, and maybe you do even some little research, and it might be through the internet or whatever, and you go into the concert and you're somehow prepared, this is an experience that you cannot duplicate. Not digitally, not analog, not anywhere, anyway. So going to a concert, therefore, I only hope will be an experience that people are after once they discover, well, it's actually pretty boring to have to listen to the type of music on the iPod, because when you go to the concert hall and you hear a whole symphony playing and you have 100 people playing for you a Mahler symphony, you never get this experience at home. And only then, if you spend thousands and thousands of dollars for the best playback equipment, you know, and the recording is fantastic. But still, what is missing is the community of listeners, the very fact that you're together in a room and they all came with the intention to just listen to music. That's an experience that I hope will come back after all the people find out, well, yes, I can listen to music at home, but it's not the same at home.
It's true. You know, even though my business is to present live and recorded music over the radio, I sometimes wish I lived back in an age when this technology didn't exist at all, because what would it have been like to go to a Wagner opera or a Beethoven symphony when everyone in that room knew this was probably the only time they were ever going to hear that piece of music, because there was no recording of it?
That's very true. You see, as I said already, you know, you can have so many performances. You have the access to so many performances today. But then ask the people who are somehow familiar with classical music, did they actually listen ever to the Moonlight Sonata by Beethoven, or the Fifth Beethoven Symphony, or the 1812 Tchaikovsky Overture? Did they actually listen to this live once? Have you ever listened to that? So that in the programming of musicians and the presenters, you know, for example, they want something unusual. Oh, we don't want the Moonlight Sonata. We don't want the Pathétique. We don't want this because that has been done so many times. But then ask the people on the street, how many times did you actually hear those great pieces
in a performance live?
In a live performance. And they probably would have to say, well, I have it in my CD collection, but I never listened to it.
Well, you can listen to music by Mozart and Ravel and Prokofiev and Brahms, performed by my guest today, Andreas Klein, this coming Sunday, 6 p.m. at Ravinia's Bennett Gordon Hall. Andreas, it's your Ravinia debut. Welcome to Chicagoland and to Ravinia. It's great to listen to you play and to talk with you this afternoon on WFMT.
It's fun.
I'd like to thank our engineer, Mary Mazurek, our impromptu producer, Louise Frank, and John Petrosky for production assistance on this. And for more information, you can go to ravinia.org. to find out more about Andreas Klein and about his recital Sunday, 6 p.m. at Bennett Gordon Hall. And by the way, this impromptu is supported in part by generous contributions from members of WFMT's Fine Arts Circle. If you enjoyed this live performance, please consider joining the Fine Arts Circle yourself. You can become a WFMT member now by pledging online at WFMT.com.